Welcome to Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bring the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we are on location in Trail Creek, Indiana, at Quality Carpet Care with Ron Papke. Ron, I just want to welcome you to the show. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, and yourself?
Good, good. To start, let's just go ahead and tell us who Ron the individual is.
Wow, so Ron the individual is a man like on a journey to not only discover himself, but to help other men discover themselves as well. Like, the journey of a man can be very challenging. You got to be the provider for your family, the spiritual leader of the family. Like, it could be very challenging. And oftentimes the trap becomes where, you know, we just get stuck providing for our family. We get stuck in that survival mode of, hey, I'm putting food on a table. Isn't that enough? And so sometimes we get stuck in that sort of place, and it could be challenging to break free out of that and be a more well-rounded father figure, and also just a man in general, be a good grounded man for yourself in the community. So that's who I am, just a man on a journey to help inspire others and just try to be the best man he could be as well.
Very cool. Very cool. So now let's switch over to Quality Carpet Care. Why don't you go into a little bit of the history, how you got started, what year you got started, and what was the contributing factor for you starting the business?
So in 2003, I started a lawn mowing business, and within a month into it, a guy called me, well, a buddy of mine called me and says, hey, Ron, can we borrow one of your trucks? Our truck broke down, and he had worked for another carpet cleaning company. And I went to work with him for a couple of days, and on that second day, because I told a guy, I said, I can't allow you to use my truck, but I'll go with you. I'm not that busy. I just started this business. He's like, let me talk to the boss. The boss said, okay, and I went with him. And they paid me like 10 bucks an hour, whatever, and gave me some gas money. And on the second day, I'm like, where can I get a machine like this? And so he knew somebody that had one broke down sitting in their garage. And I was like, let's roll. So the guy wanted $800 for it. And I didn't have a whole lot of money back then. So I said, hey, can I give you $300 and make payments? And the guy was like, let's roll. And I'm like, cool. So I picked up that carpet cleaning machine, drove it down to Indianapolis the very next day and got it fixed, spent like $300 on it, brought it back, and that machine was paid off the first week.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. So just hitting it after the machine was fixed? Just
right. You know, like, first of all, you got to talk to, like, all the people you know, and that's the easy part. And this is where a lot of businesses fail, right? So they might have already, like, a big following. They might have a big family that has a network. Maybe their mom has a network. Their dad has a network. So at first, when they first get started, maybe in the cleaning business, they clean for all those people in that network. But when that network runs dry, that's when they experience a problem. Like, oh, shit, what do I do now?
Yep.
You know, and so for me, it was easy. Like, I just find more people. And so you really have to pound the pavement. And this is way back in 2003. I don't think there were Facebook ads back then. And if there were, I didn't know about them, you know, and I'm pretty sure they probably had Google, some of the Google click leads and some of this other stuff.
AdWords,
but I didn't know about them. My thing was, I have flyers and I talk to people. Like, everybody I ran into, the only reason I was able to build a successful business, every person I ran into left my engagement with a business card.
Okay.
You know, and here's the thing. What I learned very early is that people that have a business are more likely to buy from you. Just, you don't even have to be a great salesman, but they admire your hustle and drive, because that's what took them to build their business. So if you went after business people first, you're more likely to make that sale without even having the skill of a salesman.
Right. And sales and skill, that might be an oxymoron there, but I think it's really about being able to convey your own story.
Right.
It's not about selling. It's about conveying the story of why they should be using your product.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So 2003, then what happened after that? You got multiple trucks out there now. So how did we get from 2003 buying a machine, broken down machine, to where we are now?
Man, it was a tough ride, but, you know, mowing grass, like, really took off. Like, we had like 65 accounts. So I had a few guys, and we would go out and just mow grass. Like, those guys, like, we didn't have a bunch of trucks. So I had to keep the truck that I had running, like, all the time. Like, it was constantly running from the minute it got light out to the minute it was dark, those mowers were running. So the guys would come in every day and they would work from 6 to 2. I would get them loaded up, get them on the road, and then I would work from 2 till dark, right? Because what I learned very quickly is that you can't expect someone else to work a 12, 13, 15 hour shift like you're willing to do. People, no matter how bad they may need the money, they're not going to, a lot of people aren't going to do what's required to break out of a poverty cycle. And even though they might need that extra money, they're not going to be willing to work those extra hours. And that's just something I learned, because there would be people that would I would hire that were like, Yvonne, I would love to make $1,000 a week. And even though, sure, they would like to, they're not willing to do what was necessary to earn the $1,000 a week. So I had to learn that as myself. So what happened was, like, I was just like any other entrepreneur out there. Like, I saw money everywhere. Wherever there was money, like money over here, money over there. By 2005, you know, like the carpet cleaning business was on the back burner. Like, I did that when I could, like, you know, on weekends and at nights here and there. But it really took the back seat to the landscaping business. But in 2005, I had a bar. I had a vending company. I even tried making candles. Wasn't very good. That business didn't make that much money, but I attempted that. And then we had the carpet cleaning business and lawn care business. And it wasn't until 2010 where I just really started focusing, 2010, 2011, where I just started focusing on the carpet cleaning. Because even at that, like, I learned early in 2005 that, hey, you know what? This bar is not making that much money. I got to drop this. I did it for 8 months, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. It's not making... like, it was making a little bit of money, but it wasn't making, like, the potential of that I had making money with the carpet cleaning business and the lawnmower business. So I dropped that rather quickly. And in 2010, I had a sign-making company called Sign Monkey and then an advertising company called Monkey Media. Okay. In 2009, I quit mowing grass. I sold that business off. And now we're just focused on the carpet cleaning business, the sign company, and a multimedia company. And I soon learned, like, I picked up one magazine. It was a Clean Facts magazine, right? Clean Facts is like a magazine for the carpet cleaning industry. Every industry's got magazines. And sure, I picked up this, and it took me one article out of that magazine to realize, hey, I got a problem. Like, I need to focus on one thing and make that really be really good at that one thing, right? Instead of trying to make money wherever I could see money to be made, like, because that was my problem. Like, everywhere I went, there was money, money, money. Like, I want to make it all. Let's roll. But then if you try to make money in too many avenues, the one thing that you really got going, it'll fail as well. And sure, then you don't make that much money. Like, wherever you put your energy is going to grow. So I had to learn to funnel that energy into one thing. So my carpet cleaning business really didn't take off until about 2013-14, when I was just solely focused on one business. And I think that's really what it takes. And a lot of entrepreneurs, if you have the entrepreneur spirit, it could be challenging. But it took me reading that one article where I'm not the only one. Like, they were saying about, hey, you got to be focused. And often they were talking about this in the magazine. I'm like, hey, that's me. They're talking about me in this magazine. And that's when I knew I had to shift my energy. So it was like 3 months after reading that, I stopped making signs for people. I stopped doing the advertising, and I just focused on just the carpet cleaning. So that newspaper article just hit me at the right time.
Yeah, the squirrel syndrome.
Right.
Yeah, we all have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, anybody that's in business has that. But you're right. If you can narrow your focus and put your attention to it, it definitely helps grow that. And then the one thing to add to that I've learned over the years is, if you want to add something else, maybe grab somebody else that already knows what that other thing is, partner up with them, and then try to grow that. You can't do it all yourself.
Right, right.
Yeah. That's cool. That's very cool. So entrepreneur is in your blood, I can tell. Got great passion for everything. So 3-4 years since you've really been focused on the carpet cleaning. Being an entrepreneur is about solving problems. So in the carpet cleaning business, what is the biggest problem that you're solving for people?
The biggest problem I'm solving is really, I try to educate and manage the customer's expectations while I'm there, you know. And the one thing that I would say that really sets me apart from somebody else is that we take the time to talk to them about the reappearing spot, right? So in the carpet cleaning industry, there's a spot that reappears, right? So if you spill a bottle of Coke on your floor, that's going to get into your floor. It's going to get into your carpet, your padding, and your subfloor. We're not cleaning your padding and subfloor, right? So when we clean, you know, let's say a heavily used area where they got more than one of those spots, like it'd be real easy if you just had that one spot. We could offer you a subsurface extraction and almost guarantee that that spot's never going to come back. But if you've got 10 of those because you got kids with little juice boxes, we can't, you know, it wouldn't be economical to do that.
Okay.
So then we have to manage your expectations. Like, listen, if any of those spots come back, this is why and this is what you should do to remedy it. At that point, that becomes the homeowner's responsibility and not mine. So in the carpet cleaning industry, people aren't really educating the clients as much as they should, and they're having problems. So that leads to you having a problem one time and then you doing yourself and pushing it off because you had that one bad experience, which could have been a whole lot better had that technician or the company owner provided you with that information.
And that you said carpet cleaning industry, that's every industry. Educating the client is a huge issue in every industry. And from my experience, it's one of two things: either lack of knowledge by the person trying to sell the product or being scared of the end result. But it works, right?
Right.
You educate the client and you, I think you said, manage their expectations. That's a great way to put it, that if you explain what's going to happen and how it's going to work, they're much more happy about how it's going to happen. But if you just say, oh, it's good now, and you walk away and 3 days later the stain pops back up again, then like you said, they're pissed. They're not going to come back. They're going to tell all their friends, this guy jerked me over, whatever. And the exact same thing happens if you educate them, right?
Right.
You know, it's just their expectations and then how they react to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we even started offering a 72-hour spot guarantee, and this is really good. So where we clean your carpet, if this spot repairs within 72 hours, we're going to come back, take care of it, no problem.
Okay.
And then oftentimes, they don't even call back if the spot reappears. But just knowing that you're going to come back, like, it really sets that customer at ease. Yep. Like, you're in it for the long haul. You're not just in here to make a quick buck. Right. Like the last guy they might have had.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not, like, the person that was actually in their home, you know, he might not even been like the worst employee in the world. He just was following the systems that were given to him.
Sure. And that actually leads right into my next question. You got multiple trucks running right now. You're obviously a high energy guy. So how do you make sure that the customers and clients get the same thing going on when other people are out there representing you?
That could be that's always like the biggest challenge. And so we have a pretty good system that we utilize, and that system being, you know, and this is actually a product that I'm marketing. The system is, there's so many things that are involved, and we've got some carpet cleaning friends out there that are going to be watching this video. But one thing is the pre-call. So you pre-call your customer, right? And so what I like to tell each and every person, and here's just how it is in the carpet cleaning industry, and it's probably like that across the board, but it's not how well you clean the carpet. It's how you made the customer feel about how you clean the carpet. And there's a little science, you know, probably the biggest problem in the industry is people leaving the carpet too wet. And that may be because they're not using the right cleaning product. They might be using too high a water pressure while they're cleaning, and they might just be lazy and not offering like a dry stroke after the cleaning process is done. So if I know that going in, then I can tell the guys, like, hey, this is what we have to do, you know, and just informing them. Like, the other problem in the cleaning industry, people want to know, how long is it take for my carpet to dry? Right. So you have to look at this as a holistic thing. And so when I clean behind your sofa, it's not going to be as dirty as in front of your sofa, correct? And as the carpet's dry, what's going to take is we have to control the humidity in the room. So what does that mean? That means behind the couch, we're not going to go over the carpet as heavy as we are in the front, because we don't want to use as little water as possible. So if we use as little water possible, what do we have to utilize? We have to use the power of the cleaning product and the power of the heat from our cleaning machine. And so there's some people that they might clean behind the couch the same way. And so it really what it boils down to is training the guys like, hey, behind the couch, you don't go over it as much as you would the front. Just go over real quick with the water, and then you just vacuum it very heavily after you're done going over with the water, right? So it's that simple. Just those little things is what's going to set you apart, because the other guys might not have got that training. And so they might have left the carpet. The carpet, instead of taking a day to dry, it might take a day and a half or 2 days because they left the humidity in their house as a whole. So I would recommend any carpet cleaner that was getting into the industry, they also took a water damage restoration class so they could understand how the humidity works in the drying process. Because if people write reviews on other companies, and that's another thing you want to do. Like if you were starting in the carpet cleaning industry, you would go on Google and see what the reviews are. What are people complaining about? And how can I make sure that that doesn't happen to me?
Yep. That's a great point.
Yep.
Yep. And that rolls right into, so you said it's really about training. So how many guys do you have working for you right now?
So right now we just have the two guys and myself.
Okay. Have you had to cycle through people to find those guys, or how has the hiring process gone over the years?
Yeah, it could be challenging. And the most challenging part is you could tell if someone's going to make it, if they got what it takes in the first week. Like there's going to be some people that they'd make a good helper, but not a good technician. Like they couldn't run their own truck, right? I had a young man, his name was Chris, and he worked for me for like 2 or 3 years, and he did a phenomenal job as a helper. But the moment I was sent him out in his own truck, like he quit that week.
Really? Yeah.
You know, so not everybody has what it takes, and it could be overwhelming to some people. So we need to find out within a week, does this guy got what it takes to run this truck, or does he not? Because we're not looking for helpers. We're looking for men that could get the job done, or women that could get the job done on their own. And I think as a generation of society, as people, like, they're used to people holding their hands, so they don't know how to do things on their own. And just managing the truck and critical thinking and thinking outside the box, problem-solving skills, like we live in an era where those things aren't very common. You know, they say common sense isn't very common. So the toughest skill that I had to learn is you know, really find out, does this guy got what it takes or not, and then let him go as soon as I don't find out what he takes.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's the second time you said quick to react to something, which is, I think, sometimes hard in the entrepreneurial world, is that we want the best for that person, and it's hard to just cut it off. But that's better for everybody in the long run.
Right.
They don't have what it takes. You got to cut them off. And you also said something earlier, wanting the money versus the hard work to get the money. Do you find that a little bit in the hiring process too? That, yeah, I can work 15 hours a week or I mean 15 hours a day and let's go. But then 5 days in, they're like, you know, after 3 hours, they want to go home.
Yeah. So my wife does the hiring now. Like I don't even have a part of that. Right. Okay. So I would try to give people the benefit of doubt a little too long. And that was always, I think that's the struggle as a human nature. Like we want people to do better. And we think, like, here's what I used to think. Like I could help people become better, right? Be a better person, be a better employee. But if you're not a good employee, it's not my job. And I'm not here as your coach or your therapist to help you become a better employee. Like you either already are, or you're not going to become, you know? And in this industry, in my business, like there's other industries where someone might be able to coach them a little bit more. But here's the problem in this industry that I'm in. As a carpet cleaning technician, I have to put you, imagine a car dealership and you're trying to combine the mechanic and the salesman into one person. So we need a multi-skilled person. Like you got to be able to do the dirty work and you got to be able to talk to the customer. That's not common. Like there's some people that don't mind. You're going to be sweating. You're going to get dirty. You're going to be cleaning carpets, manual labor. But I also need you to be customer friendly.
Right.
Right. So this is where like roofing companies, a lot of those guys that are doing roofing, they couldn't manage customers. They just do the labor.
They got the salesman doing the customer side.
Right. So when it comes to the carpet cleaning industry, that's what makes it a challenge. It can be challenging because you need both people. You need a person be skilled at customers and friendly with the customers and not afraid to talk to the customers. There was a guy named Mike we had working. And Mike would show up. He'd have his lunch packed. He'd be on time every day. But Mike didn't talk to the employee that well. So one day, he goes out to a job and doesn't ask the customer if they want the furniture moved. Hey, would you like me to move this furniture? It's a yes or no. Hey, if they want to move, great, I'll move it. Right. If not, we won't move it, right? And so, and then sometimes you could say, hey, I should move this chair, whether they want it or not, right? Like, I'm going to move this chair. So, like, what I've done in the past was, like, ask the client, like, hey, you want me to move this chair? They'd be like, no. I'm like, you know what? If it's okay with you, I'd rather just move it anyway. And when you do little things like that, like people just, they start telling the world. You don't have to get, you don't have to spend all this money on advertising. Like people just tell people. Like there was one time where this lady had six stairs that were just dirty, right? And I asked her, I said, hey, do you mind if I just clean these six stairs for you? I would feel bad as a person if I didn't clean them while I already got everything set up. Like it wouldn't take me much just to clean them. That creates customers for life. Yeah. And the technician isn't looking at the long haul. They're looking at it for the short term. They're living week to week. They're not looking at years from now as far as the company. And so when you could get your employees engaged into, hey, this is a long-term thing. You know, we need each one of our clients to be cheerleaders for us. Then they start doing those little things. Hey, would you like me to move that? So Mike, actually, we got the customer complaint. Mike had to go out and clean underneath that chair that he didn't ask the customer to move. Well, that became a repetitive thing. And I had a talk with him. I said, hey, either you got to get good at talking to people. Like here he is working a job where he's making double the money like he came from the factory, you know. And so he's making double the money as if he were working in a factory. But he doesn't have that communication skill that you need working right. in this type of industry. So I just talked to him real nicely one day, like, Mike, you got to increase your skill set for talking to these customers or I can't have you working here. Like, I'm going to take you to some of my network groups with me to have you present some stuff just so that you could get better as this skill. He's like,
break
yeah,
that
right.
ice.
He quit that same day.
Did he really?
He quit the same day.
Because he was nervous about it?
So nervous. Like, he didn't want to increase his skill set of yeah. communicating with a customer. And I couldn't keep him on. Like, I've laid it on the line. I can't continue to work here. You're going to hurt our reputation right. just by not communicating with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like half of the battle, right?
Yeah. And something like that, the crazy part is that 99% of people have that fear. But if you know that everybody has that fear, then just get over it.
Right. And that it's easier said than done. It's like yeah. telling a drug addict to quit using drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it makes sense. Let's do it. Let's quit using.
Right.
But it's not easy.
Yeah. No, I agree. So, and maybe you've already answered this, but what's one piece of advice you could go back to? Let's go all the way back to 2003. One piece of advice that you would give yourself that you've learned in the entrepreneurial world?
One piece of advice. If I just had to tell myself one thing, I would think it was just do the personal development now. Like what I've learned in business, like the better you become a more rounded person, it's like the rule of the world universe, like you're just going to attract better things into your life. And so I was one of those guys where like I was just angry. Like, my wife shouldn't be with me right now, the stuff I put her through. Like, I would just yell at her, snap on her, call her bad names just because I was just a lost man. And we touched on this before. Like, it's tough being, you know, trying to be a man when you may not have ever had a good role model to begin with. And so I was just an angry person. And as soon as I got over some of that, more money just started coming my way. Like, it was like magic, right? And so, and it's almost like the more you go after and you more you want to do well for others and not just yourself, the quicker you get out of that survival mode, the quicker like your business is just going to explode. And if I knew that going in, like I would want to, you know, help myself way back in 2003. In 2003, I wasn't trying to become a better person. I was just navigating through life the best I could, right? Sure. And through those years, when I was pushing those lawnmowers those years, like, I started making better decisions. And the harder I worked, the better decisions I made, and I started becoming a better person. But that didn't take away from all these issues I had, being angry, bitterness, you know, all this stuff that I had bottled up inside me that I didn't talk to nobody about. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that even my wife didn't know about myself that I didn't even talk to her, like, until, like, the last couple years. Like, I would ask myself, what do I need to process and deal with in order to become a better person?
Sure.
So that one question, if we ourselves as men or women ask ourselves that question, we would all be doing better in our business. I think it would, because a lot part of our business depends on our person and our personality.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could develop that first, business is going to boom twice as quick.
I think people, too, they think they have to put a mask on in their business world. Like, this is my personal world, this is my business world.
Right, right.
Which I think if you get over that and do the personal development, like you said, it flows in a lot easier that way. And I think it's just, one, getting out of your own way and getting out of your own head. You know, you think about it too much.
Right.
I got to make the money. I got to make the money. I got to make the money. I see on your bookshelf, you got a bunch of books. Any recent book or podcast or person you're following that's given you an aha moment recently?
So right now I'm reading a book by James Arthur Ray called Harmonic Wealth. And, you know, he talks about, you know, going through the different spiritual stuff. Like, you could get lost in spirituality where you actually lose responsibility of yourself, right? So there's a balancing act. So in the spiritual world, like, people talk about, well, if God wants me to get the job, he'll give me the job. Well, you could get stuck in that world instead of becoming more responsible, saying, you know what? What do I have to do to get that job? So it's like a balancing act of personal responsibility and spirituality. Now, I'm not saying spirituality creates lack of responsibility, but sometimes it could go either way, and people need that balancing act. So this book, Harmonic Wealth, kind of provides that and integrates that and, you know, makes you more aware of that.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what was the author again?
It's James Arthur Ray.
I think that not only in the spiritual, but sometimes on the societal, like, I deserve all this, so you need to give it to me versus going out and working for it.
Yeah, and the other thing for myself, like, I got addicted to giving back, you know. 2013, like, I just wanted to, you know, give to my community, give to you know, help make this world a better place. And you could get addicted to that, and then maybe, you know, you don't fulfill some of your responsibility as much as you would. So that's where you got to learn to balance that, too, because you learn, hey, I'm going to give back. I mean, we did hundreds of things to give back. I mean, we gave for Christmas, we gave police officers free carpet cleaning. We've given turkeys away. I used to go to the bad neighborhoods and cook out hamburgers and hot dogs just as an act of love for people, not preaching to them or anything.
Yeah.
I created multiple curriculums to help people grow themselves. One of the things I did was I wrote a book called Create Yourself, because I asked thousands of people, who are you? What do you want in life and why? And people can't answer that question.
Yeah.
So if you ask me in 2003 who I was, I'd be like, well, I'm a landscaper. I mow grass.
Yeah.
You'd be like, yeah, but who are you? I'm like, I mow grass.
Right. Right.
If you ask me, what do you do for fun? I'm like, don't know. I mow grass. So we got to be well-rounded as a person. And oftentimes it could be challenging if we didn't grow up in an environment that allotted to that.
Sure.
And not everybody has that foundation, those fundamental foundations. I think the more of electronic world we live in, those foundations are sometimes stripped away from us.
Yeah, everybody's looking down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. So outside of your business life, what kind of stuff do you do for fun?
So, man, I never thought about it, but I really enjoy mountain bike riding.
Oh, okay.
Like, not in, like, real mountains, like,
right,
but, like,
right, right.
You Potato Creek, you get on these mountain bike trails. They even got some good ones in LaPorte, Indiana. But, you know, just going down this hill where you might crash your bike. Like, if you're not paying full attention and you do the wrong thing, like, you might crash, right? And it just provides this, like, adrenaline, and it's really fun. It's a
some
fun
thrill
experience.
Seeking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I enjoy the mountain biking and riding my motorcycle.
Okay.
For years, I used to think, oh, okay, it's dad's day off. He's going fishing with the kids, right? Well, if I don't like fishing and the kids don't like fishing, why the heck do we keep even trying to go fishing? Like, Dad, we don't even like fishing. Like, yeah, but this is what men do, son, right? Like, no, not all men. If you don't love going fishing, the kids, they're like, Dad, we didn't catch nothing. I don't want to go, right? Like, after a while, they're like, Dad, we went three times without catching nothing. Do we have to go fishing? Right. You know? And there's our people out there that are great fishermen, you know, but I think as men, like, that's like every man owns a fishing pole, right? How often it gets used is another topic. But, you know, and I do enjoy, you know, going out there. But I myself would enjoy going on speedboat, going on jet skis more than I would trying to catch a fish.
Yeah.
And I think you have to learn that because somehow we're taught like, right. Hey, I'm going to fish. I'm going to fish. And you don't even like it. You just do it, right? But then you learn, hey, this speedboat's kind of fun, you know, tubing and going on these jets. This is really fun. Like, I enjoy this more than fishing. This is what I need to do.
Right. Yeah, I am not a fisherman at all. I can't sit there, for, like you said, catch nothing. Like, I could be doing a million other things other than doing this. Yeah. So. And I think you're right, though. It is. We should be doing it because it's some societal norm,
right,
that all guys fish. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to talk about?
We could talk all day, but we don't want to bore the listeners. Yeah, so the balancing act of the man is that's really what I want to inspire others, because it's really hard and it's still challenging for myself to find that. And I think, like, right now I'm really good at where I'm at. Like, I'm only focused on my carpet cleaning business. I do some speaking and some writing on the side. And the only thing I'm doing actively is I go to the prison here locally and talk every 2 weeks. And so I'm not trying to talk at every prison in the world. It's just like I'm committed to talking at this prison to the inmates. Like, I got that balance, right? Okay. As opposed to before, like, what else can I do? Like, let's forget about having to do work, right? Because, right, like, right now, as an entrepreneur, if you build your business properly, like, you should get to a place where it takes minimal effort to run your business on a good day. So, like, yesterday I managed the business from the lake. Like, I drove my motorcycle around. And so what I did was I put my headphones on, my wireless headphones on, and then my helmet over it. So every time I got a sales call, I would pull the bike over and handle the sales call in a parking lot or something. And so I was able to ride a motorcycle for a few hours and still handle my obligations, what I needed to. But we also have to be proactive in our marketing and who we're connecting with, our network. We should always be growing our network. So it can't be like every day's a motorcycle sure. day. It can't be like every day's a day at the prison where you're talking to inmates. It's got to be the harmonic balance. Like, where do I need to give when? And I think the hardest thing for that is, like, we live in seasons. Things change. So there are weeks where I might have to work 80 hours a week yep. in my business, and I didn't get to ride my motorcycle, and I didn't get to go to the prison. And then there's other weeks, well, hey, I'm going to go 2 days to the prison this week, or I get to ride my motorcycle 10 hours this week. So it's a balancing act. You have to be reactive to life. And I think everybody wants this black and white, this is what you got to do today manual, and they right. try to take the fun out of life. And it could be a natural learned behavior. Like, this is my day. Well, some days you just have to go with the flow. And as an entrepreneur, that could be challenging because you got all these other people telling you, well, you got to do it this way. Everybody wants to give you advice and say, well, you got to do it this way. Yeah, you know, and that's
a lot of truth.
You know, I've yeah. learned to not listen to those people
yeah.
because those are advice for you. That works for you, or it doesn't even work for you. Right. You got to be real careful mm-hmm. who you take advice from.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, what you just said, people think that everything needs to be linear, the same all the time. But a true entrepreneur knows that, you know what, if I am working 100 hours this week, even next week, I might not be able to do anything. It might be 3 months from now that I can go in and do these things that I enjoy. But when I can do them, I'm going to do them.
Well, I always like to relate this to farming, right? Because if when it's time to harvest,
yeah,
you don't worry about nothing else but that harvest.
Yep.
That's all. You don't get to do none of that other stuff. It's not time to go fishing. It's not time to win a tractor pulling contest. It's time to harvest your crop.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to learn that in an entrepreneur, because part of the entrepreneur spirit is getting to do what I want and not be stuck, right, in one place for too long. But we have to, hey, when it's time to harvest that crop, it's that time.
Yeah.
Harvest the crop 20 hours a day. Tomorrow you might get, you might only have to work five, but we don't know.
Right.
We got to go full throttle. And I think that's the part where a lot of people don't understand is, how do I go full throttle? I don't understand, Ron. I gotta live this balanced lifestyle. So people get confused about what does a balanced lifestyle look like? And it could be different every single day. And the number one thing that I've learned is just to be present. When you're with your family, you're there with your family, not trying to manage things on the internet at the same time. Just be there with them. When it's time to work, grind to your fullest ability so you don't have the regret when you're on the couch with your family, like, man, I should have did more today. Because that's what happens. This is real life stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are great points. It definitely is a balancing act, and it doesn't always balance in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, everybody talks about balanced family life and work life. Well, it's not a 50-50 balance. Today it might be 100% family, and tomorrow it might be 100% business.
Right.
But you're right, though. People need to realize that it is an ongoing, fluid thing, and it's not always linear. We'll wrap up here a little bit. Cleaning. If someone's looking to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
Call.
Call?
I prefer calling.
Okay.
But there's people that prefer messaging and email, and that's their chosen method. But the way that I answer the fast is call me. If you send me an email, I might not get it till the next day. I don't check my emails all the time and on purpose. Like, I don't want to be tied down to that. But if you call me, that gets my full attention.
Okay.
You know.
So what are the digits to call you at?
219-608-3145.
Okay. Company page on Facebook too, if they want to check out reviews and stuff.
Yeah, it's at Quality Carpet Care. Yep. Then the website is qcc150.com.
All right, cool. Any last parting words?
No, that's it, man.
Cool.
That is it.
Yeah, good talking to you. You're definitely high energy. I love it.
I get excited though.
Yeah, you know, I love it.
You know. There's times I get excited, and there's times, like, by noon or 1, I'll be just like everybody else. Like, where's my nap?
Hey, naps are good. Naps are good. Hey, good talking to you.
Hey, you as well, my man.
Thank you.
Thanks.